Hello and welcome to the Telecom Electronic Beats podcast with me, Whitney Wei. I'm the editor-in-chief at Electronic Beats. In this podcast, we meet with the musicians, creatives, and characters driving forward culture today. Join me in discovering how our guests create bold visions and brighter futures.
The first one I attended and got to play was on the election day here. It was March 17th, so pretty much a month after my first dose of vaccine. The party was absolutely mental, crazy, insane. I think there were about between 300 and 400 people there, which is a sight I haven't seen for a very, 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 very long time. The energy was amazing. It was electrifying. I was a little bit nervous once I got to play. There was a DJ that played before me. He played amazing. Yeah, it was, you know, the first time doing this after a year. And my personal take on it is that I thought that there would be some sort of an in-between period between the reopening of venues here in Israel to the full comeback of nightlife and partying. And I couldn't be more wrong. Like, it was absolutely the same as I remembered it. Like, everyone's on it, everyone's raving, everyone's dancing, shirts off, you know, absolutely the same. And I remember that it really, really, really surprised me because I did not expect that in any way. So it was an amazing experience for me. It took me about 5 minutes to get myself together and understand that, okay, this is exactly the same. And once I realized that, it was absolutely incredible.
Amichai Matias has been a DJ in Tel Aviv for over 20 years. He's talking about the recent reopening of clubs in his city. According to the Israel Ministry of Health this month, 56% of citizens have been inoculated with the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, meaning that its nighttime economy is in full swing after nearly a year of hibernation. Those with vaccine certificates are given the green light to party their corona cares away. Amichai is one of them. He received his two doses in February.
So if you were DJing and you were looking around this room of 400, 500 people, what did the club look like? What did it feel like? What did your emotions, like, what club was it? Tell me everything. Tell me the genres of music, everything.
Yeah. The venue is called Pi Garden. It's part of a complex that's been existing here in Tel Aviv for the past, I would say, 3 or 4 years, which is a complex that holds a club that's called Alphabet, a smaller club that's called Gamma or the Gamma Room, and the Pi Garden, which is it's an outdoor venue, but a part of it is covered. So it's kind of a hybrid between a outside location and a dance floor, which has some sort of roofing, but it's still very much open. So this was the setting, this was the venue, and I remember looking at everyone on the dance floor because the DJ booth is located a little bit higher than everyone. And I remember seeing people's faces, you know, smiling all around and really feeling the music and hearing it on a large sound system like they haven't heard it in so very long. And once I saw that and I, you know, saw the energy and felt the energy from the people, obviously it affected me back because this is exactly as I remembered partying. And this is exactly what, you know, what I used to feel a year and something ago. So it was very emotional. It was a little bit confusing. But the point I want to emphasize is that it only takes 5 minutes to understand that not much has changed. You know, people still want to experience it on the dance floor. DJs still want to experience it playing music. And I thought that would be different, but it wasn't different at all. In terms of music, it was quite uplifting. I would say it was not like banging techno or whatever. I would like to say quite open in terms of the spectrum of music. So anything between house and like organic house music and 90s house and a little bit of acid house and Italo disco and disco. So that was pretty much the energy of the vibe. It also suits like the atmosphere and the venue itself, because as I said, it's like a little bit of a hybrid between being an outdoor open, you know, venue to having like a proper dance floor and like a club like experience. But you could see that people there wanted a more uplifting and happier vibe rather than, you know, the usual or familiar, you know, kind of banging stuff.
How long did you stay at the party for?
I got there quite early because I wanted to experience it, you know, and not just arrive for my DJ set. So all in all, I played for 3 hours and I was there for an overall of about 6 hours. So before my set and after my set, I stayed, you know, a lot of my friends were there. The promoter is a friend of mine. A lot of DJ friends attended and it was great to see everyone once again, because we saw each other during this year, you know, when it was possible, but not under that setting.
Right. And have you gone clubbing every weekend since?
So like I said, it happened very fast. Once everything opened up, and it didn't take a long time for nightlife to come back full on. So it's pretty much been, yeah, every weekend since mid-March for me. And it's incredible. What can I say? Like, it's same thing all over again. It's like what we remembered, what we used to love. It's the same.
What has clubbing in Tel Aviv looked like for the past year?
Do you mean during this, during 2020, like once COVID hit hard?
Yeah, I would say, what's the timeline?
So Israel has been under lockdown for many, many months. Like, we've had either 3 or 4 like long lockdowns, if I remember correctly. 3 for sure. I don't remember if we had 4, but each lockdown was for about between 4 and 6 weeks. And I'm talking like full lockdown. Nothing is open, not restaurants, not bars, definitely not clubs. So the periods of time that venues were open was about maybe 3 or 4 weeks. Because during, like, in between lockdowns, when stuff did start to open, clubs never happened here during 2020, like since March 2020 until last month, I would say. So clubbing has pretty much been non-existent, apart from like illegal stuff, illegal raves and illegal like underground parties, which, as I said, I haven't attended any of them, if I remember correctly. So I know that quite a few of them happened. Quite a few of them were memorable, I'm sure, to whoever attended, because a lot of people wanted to still experience it, but none of them were very much large scale. They were very, very, very underground. Stuff were also happening, you know, in people's homes and houses and apartments. But apart from that, it was pretty much a desert of raving and clubbing.
And what does clubbing or even festivals in Tel Aviv look like for the future?
Okay, so as I said, like, it looks like it's coming back, and it's coming back full on. In terms of clubbing, every club that was closed during this past year has reopened. And according to current regulations, you can let 75% of the permitted occupancy in the club. And that's the current situation to this day. As far as I've heard and read, it's going to open up even more as of next week. It's not yet confirmed, but it looks like that this is going to happen, that it's going to be like completely open. So no longer 75%, like if permit allows 1,000 people can get in. So that's in terms of clubbing. Also has implications, obviously, for festivals and similar venues. So I haven't yet heard or saw any announcement of an upcoming festival happening here, but I think it's a matter of days to like a week or two tops until we see an announcement about an upcoming festival, simply because it's going to be possible to hold these events.
All of this, of course, is in stark contrast to the situation in Berlin, where there's a new lockdown policy in place. There are now nightly curfews preventing people from leaving their homes between the hours of 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., unless they are alone. However, where there is clubbing, even in countries the world over, there is fragile optimism. How do you feel looking at the rest of the world and seeing the struggles other countries have been facing, especially in light of your recent freedoms?
So, I'm only hopeful that people would follow and they would realize that, you know, there's probably no other solution to this current situation rather than get the vaccine. It's my personal take on it. It's my position. And I don't think that, you know, that there's anything else or there's any sort of other solution to what we went through and still currently facing in other places. So I want other countries to reopen and get their old lives back and get back to their normal routine. I feel very much lucky in a way to be in the position that I'm in currently. Everyone has been hit very hard, including Israel, obviously. And I'm just, you know, I just feel lucky to be among one of the very first countries that has put COVID behind it. And this is the general talk here in Israel, that COVID here is over.
Calling from Accra, Ghana, the Mixpack and Enchufada affiliated producer, Gafachi, gives me the lowdown on what life has been like for him.
Last year, when the pandemic broke out, we first heard the news that China was shutting down because of the pandemic breakout in Wuhan. And we all thought, oh, okay, this is a Western and, you know, Asia thing. Most people that I'm around, not everybody, I don't want to generalize, thought, oh, this is something that's just going to be happening in the West. So I think between January and February, there were rumors that, you know, things were going to go bad in the coming months. And when we actually got the news that, okay, Ghana will be going into a lockdown, we observed a 90-day strict regulations to observe social distancing and also wear masks all of a sudden. You know, it's something we are not used to. We always see this when the SARS pandemic broke out in Asia. So they locked down public places like clubs, pubs, even public businesses such as restaurants. And the only places that were open were essential spaces like the hospitals, the shopping malls, and the little like corner stores and all that. And if you want to go to buy something, you have to really observe the social distancing regulations. And even us, the citizens, were really taking it very seriously. Like, I never saw my dad for 3 months, not because he couldn't move and come and see me, but we were so like worried about how the news broke out that older people are more susceptible to the virus than the younger ones. So I couldn't see my family for like 3 months, and I was staying in always. Even at some point, if my friends want to come around, I'm like, nah, you can't come around. It's not safe. And when it started out, the cases were not too much, but we're hearing that a lot of people were losing their lives. There were cases being reported at the hospitals and all that. But, you know, Ghana is a very chill place already. So stuff like this is like we prepare ourselves mentally, you know, and physically for stuff like this. But economically, it has really affected a lot of people.
At the onset of the pandemic, Ghana, with its approximately 30 million residents, was predicted to see as many as 75,000 deaths. It's had around 770 in comparison to Germany at 82,000. Some believe that the Ebola virus outbreak 6 years ago is what prepared the national government to mobilize on a comprehensive COVID response plan. Ghana's free circulation of public health information, careful contact tracing, and existing alliance with the World Health Organization also played a major part in its pandemic containment.
I'm not going to necessarily put out something like that you have to be familiar with what's going on or like the lockdown policies in Germany, but do you think that there's a cultural difference in how people in Ghana handle the coronavirus as opposed to people perhaps in Europe or in the West?
I think in the West, the regulations and the rules are very, very tight, because I have my friends here in Ghana, Kumasi Kwame and Walter Vino, through my speakers. And I can see they really took it very tough. Like, the situation was tough for them when it broke out. And Kwame was here in December, you know. And yeah, for us, I think naturally we are naturally obedient. We have that obedient nature about us, you know. So when you are told to do something, you want to do them. Sometimes we do break some of the rules. But I think our natural behavior is what's really helping with containing the whole pandemic and also observing the rules. Ghana, peace is like priority on our list. And anything that will make us have a peaceful living is what we observe, we go for. We won't opt for anything else if it doesn't involve peace.
When did you see the restrictions being more relaxed?
Oh, I think after 90 days.
Oh, really?
Yeah, after 90 days, everything became very lenient, because but schools were closed still. I think schools resumed not long ago. I think about 3 months ago, kids could go back to school. Public offices were always opened, but when you go in, you have to really observe the social distancing regulations. But I think the rules became very lenient after 90 days. Yeah, I'm sure about that.
But like bars and restaurants and clubs or open air events, how was that after 90 days?
That was a little bit slow. I think they had to ride out the whole thing for 6 months. So 180 days was when we started. Because it happened in March, and in August was when the club started opening. The pubs that I go to started opening again around August.
How was that? Do you remember what the energy was like in terms of people being able to see each other again? Do you remember what you felt like being able to go to these clubs now after 180 days?
It was a little bit liberating, you know, it was a little bit liberating, but it wasn't the same because when you go out, you can see business is not as vibrant as it used to be. You can see that not a lot of people are coming in to buy. Even when people come in to buy, they don't want to stick around. They just want to leave the next minute. And I don't know other clubs that people go to, maybe they had a different experience, but what I observed was it wasn't the same.
Could you describe what it looks like in Accra now? What is the lifestyle like?
Normal. Normal. Yeah. But you are just not allowed to have public events. But a few people are organizing like events in pubs where a lot of celebrities are flying in from Nigeria, coming to Ghana to party, and everything is like normal. The open air venues are still opened. The pubs are opened. I think restaurants, you are not allowed to eat in the restaurants. It's only takeaway. And the public transport, they are back to fitting 3 people in one seat.
Wow.
You know, it's like everything is back to normal. But everyone is wearing their mask. People carry their hand sanitizers around. But to be fair, I would say it's like COVID don't exist when you come to Ghana.
Wow.
Yeah.
And have you talked to your friends about going to these open air events and how maybe how they feel, or are they down for it? Does it feel like they're finally, like you said, like liberated, or is there still some kind of hesitation?
There's a little bit of hesitation when you speak to people who are very, very in tuned with what's happening. You know, people who are very in tuned kind of hesitate when you ask them to come out and hang around in these open air spots or venues. They are very hesitant to do it. But after a while, when you see everyone going about their business normally, you're like, okay, let me just join the pack and just go and have a good time and come back home.
Mm-hmm. And the last question that I really wanted to ask you is, now that you said it feels as though everything is normal and almost as if COVID doesn't exist in Accra, how does it feel looking at the rest of the world and seeing all the different levels of struggle that are going on in Europe specifically?
Me, it's affecting me because my audience are predominantly Europeans and Westerners, you know, so it's really affecting me a lot because sometimes I will have fans hit me up trying to talk to me and be like, oh, how is it going? I hope you are keeping well in the COVID pandemic and everything, and I will speak to them. They'll tell me, yo, Gafachi, it hasn't been easy. I've been out of work, you know, the normal COVID conversations when you are talking about how it's affected us and all that. Also, what really is scary, to be very honest, because someone you love or someone you really care about is just a touch away from dying, mm-hmm. you know, because they could be in the wrong place the wrong time and they can catch the virus. So you are always keeping your ears out in the streets, looking out and also trying to see if everyone is all right. And no one can feel okay and secure in this situation. Like when you think about it, even if you are not being affected directly, indirectly are being affected in a way, you know, because seriously, this summer, I would love to come to Europe, you know, to do what I do, meet people, but I can't do that now. So it's also affecting me. And like I said in the beginning, my mobility has really taken a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
And also the people that also I would want to see are also like struggling in this situation. They have to wait for reliefs from the governments and all that. So yeah, it's not something that I find pleasing. It's difficult.
Right. That makes sense. I think that also part of it is the fact that, like you said, when you're in this underground dance music community, it is a very global system. And so it's not as though you're just making music in your own city and that's it. And then you're just surrounded by your local community. You very much are so connected and collaborating with so many different people that when you see what they're going through, it, you almost take on that as well. Because of course you want your collaborators and you want your fans and audiences to also be able to live as freely as you do right now. In China and Taiwan, cultural events, including clubbing, have been raging on as early as April of last year. Editor Caroline Whiteley reported the story, The Realities of Post-Lockdown Clubbing in China for Electronic Beats in the Spring of 2020. Within, she details government strategies such as closed-off management or strictly controlled entrances and exits of 13,000 residential districts, plus mandatory health registrations and temperature checks as a leading factor in curtailing outbreaks. Ray Ho, an artist known for her release on Planet Mu's experimental sub-label, Objects Limited, calls us from Shanghai, where she recently scored several shows for the city's Physical Fashion Week. Raised in Guangzhou in China, she lived in Berlin for 4 years before deciding to move back home last March. Can you tell me a little bit about why you decided to move, especially because it is during this whole lockdown fiasco?
You mean move back to China?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just literally because of coronavirus. Because I remember I made the decision super quick, but I wasn't really planning to be like, I was like, okay, I'm just going to go back for a few months. After everything's coming down, I'm going to come back to Europe because everything's going to go back to normal. Because I remember very clearly it was kind of right after the outbreak of Italy. And then like the rest of Europe are still kind of just like, nothing's happening. It's just Italy. And then like, it's never going to be something huge. And I already knew it's going to be crazy because I know the situation in China. I've been following it. And then, yeah. And I saw like how everything's turning out in Italy. And I was just really scared.
When was that? Was that March or April 2020?
March.
Okay. Go on.
Yeah, it was like the beginning of March. And then I saw everything. At that time, I still have like shows lining up. And then I'd be like, call my agency. I'd be like, I think I need to cancel my shows and go back to China. Yeah, it was like super quick decision. I made the decision and then I arranged everything, checked with my doctor and then like cancel all my shows and then arrange my room out and then just move, like fly in within a week, basically.
Could you walk me through what clubbing in China looks like right now?
I feel like the rest of the world is going to be really crazy about it, but basically it's just normal. It's just like normal clubbing. There's no restriction, basically. I mean, for the clubs, they kind of need to like be careful with like the cleaning and everything. But for the rest of the customers, it's like except for some clubs, you need to kind of like show the QR code to prove that you are like safe. Basically, we have a QR code for everyone. And if you're safe, you're like you have the green pass, basically showing like, oh, you never been abroad during the last 14 days. And then you got your text if you come back from abroad, and then if you come from a region that's like have like outbreaks recently, you need to get tested or like you need to be in quarantine for 14 days basically. And if you just stay in where like there's no outbreaks and then everything's really under control, then your passcode is gonna be green and then you can basically just go into like everywhere with no problem.
Yeah, right. So I know last year we did a little bit of reporting on clubs opening around April, May. Mm-hmm. And last time we realized that there was like some temperature checks, you know, there was some images of certain people still wearing masks on the dance floor. Is there still temperature checks when you go into the club? Are people wearing masks at the club? Or is it really like when you say normal, it's like what you would imagine, like fully, fully normal?
I mean, I think like probably in a few clubs, they still do that because mm-hmm. they have like this machine, very like easy machine that you can just like walk through it and they will check your temperature. But I noticed it's like not every club have it, basically. So Very few people wear masks. Really, really depends on if the guy was like, oh, I want to be fully safe about it. But like, it's not like imposed on people that you have to wear mask, basically. Like,
yeah,
we don't wear mask in clubs. Like, it's really
right,
normal.
Right. It's hard to dance when it's hard to breathe in a mask. Could you tell me, like, I guess because you were in Europe for quite some time, you were in Berlin for quite some time, and obviously your background and your cultural heritage is in China. Could you tell us a little bit about the differences that you saw in terms of how each place handled the coronavirus? Because you said in March, you were like, it's going to be bad. I'm going to leave. So how did you, yeah, can you just tell me a little bit about different places and how they handled it?
I mean, the thing about China is like, it's not it's not a democratic society. So people have to follow rules, basically. It's like the government have the power to tell people, okay, you need to stay the fuck home and then you cannot get out. Otherwise, you're going to be in big trouble. You know, like, that's the thing. So people listen. People have to follow the rules. So, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about like how a lot of the place handling the situation way over the top than what it should be handled. But overall, it's effective. It's like basically under control pretty quick, you know, like, I mean, the people are really understanding as well. It's like everyone's really scared of this thing because you see the footage in Wuhan at that time when everything's like spreading and then the whole city is locked down like within one night. Nobody can get out. Nobody can get in, you know. So everyone's scared. My parents are scared. I was scared when I was in Europe as well. I was like, fuck, like, please don't nothing happen to my friends or family, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of articles going about what this virus is, because at that time, nobody really knows what it is. I mean, there's like something exaggerating for sure, but overall, the informations are pretty accurate. And there's like platforms, official, unofficial platforms, like sharing knowledge about this.
China is currently revving towards an ambitious vaccination goal of 560 million. Around 40% of its citizens by the end of June. The New York Times recently reported that its national government has been launching a number of tactics, including buy one, get one free ice cream cone deals, as well as threats over losing potential schooling and employment opportunities to mobilize any vaccine skeptics. It seems now that given China's control over the coronavirus waves, leading to spikes in domestic travel and in-person events, many citizens do not feel the urgency for immunity.
Can you tell us the last clubbing event that you went to and what it was like in full detail?
So I played this event that basically Chen Tianzhuo, I think, yeah, basically a lot of people know him also. So he run this party called Asian Doughboys. And this one is like a special edition because he released this new video work that he also kind of collaborate with 33EM. I kind of don't know how to say
EMYBW.
Yeah, I was like, I never know how to like spell it because it's like, yeah. So yeah, she made the music for the video. So I was booked for both of the events that he did in Beijing and in Shanghai. So the Beijing one is the premiere of the video. So they were showing it in the club that we were playing, which was Zhao Dai. It was packed. It was like 400 people, more than 400 people in that fucking club. Yeah, and then I can't see shit because it's like, yeah, it's just, I see like the back of the head of people, basically. That one was really fun. And the last one was the edition in Shanghai. They didn't really show the video, but it was partly in the VJ. Yeah, there were a lot of people as well. And it was kind of also during Fashion Week. So there were like fashion and non-fashion people, but you can't really tell because it's like all club is like really, really dark inside the dance floor. I mean, as what you have mentioned, I think they have like one machine at the door that's checking people's temperature, but mm-hmm. nobody was wearing masks and everything's just kind of like normal.
In Taiwan, it's as if the pandemic never happened. Lies Records and Pan affiliate Su Sing stayed in Taichung with his family for about 10 months last year. He says that in terms of coronavirus management, Taiwan had implemented stringent health requirements almost immediately after hearing of the initial outbreak in Wuhan. He's now found his way back to his usual base in Shanghai, where he's been for the last 5 months, after having to quarantine for nearly a month and a half total due to travel and work restrictions.
When did you relocate during this pandemic?
So basically, I was stuck in Taiwan, and because of kind of the travel kind of lock, I wasn't able to come back to China for 8-9 months. So I finally was able to get back to China like around November.
And before you left Taiwan, I want to kind of walk it back to the very beginning, to the height of the pandemic. I would say around, was it the beginning of the year, beginning of 2020?
Yeah, it was basically February when it, like, the news broke in China.
Okay. So what did it look like when you were in Taiwan? What was daily life like? What was nightlife like?
My whole situation was really crazy because I was in Vietnam actually when the pandemic in China broke, and then I wasn't able to get back to China, and then I had to do a gig in Turkey. But then, anyways, so I had to go to Turkey, and then from Turkey I flew back to Taiwan.
Okay,
and that was already March. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's quite the situation. So when you flew back, where in Taiwan did you land?
I landed in Taipei, and then 2 days after I landed, they said that everybody that landed in the last 4 days had to go quarantine. So they actually started quarantine, like requiring quarantine after I landed, like 2 days after I landed. So I went back into like a room.
Wow. It seems like the health policies are pretty stringent in Taiwan.
Yeah, extremely. And also China, right from the start, you know, they locked the borders already, mm-hmm. you know.
And why was that?
I think Taiwan had experience with the H1N1 flu before. So like in 2009. So they kind of like knew like how bad things could get, you know, mm-hmm. and how serious to take things. And I think, you know, China as well. So right from the start, they knew you kind of have to like nip this like right away.
Mm-hmm. At that point, you're in Taiwan. At which moment in time did you start seeing things become more stabilized?
You know, Taiwan actually handled it really well from the very start. Taiwan actually never went into lockdown. The border control became really tight, basically not letting tourists in and also like students, stuff like this, you know. Only like Taiwanese people with Taiwanese passports could get in, or people with very special visas. So they started that very early on, like in March, right? And so Taiwan never really went into lockdown. And I think it's at like 500-600 cases now, like during, you know, this whole time, it's only had 500-600 cases.
Mm-hmm. And because it never went into lockdown, obviously a lot of curious listeners want to know what nightlife was like and what the clubbing culture, how healthy it was. So could you describe that a little bit?
Yeah. So at the end, kind of when they started requiring people to do quarantining, and then there was like more active cases in Taiwan, everybody was very like willing to, you know, wear the mask and follow the rules, basically. Everybody was, there's a real strong sense of like civic duty in Taiwan. And there's a sense of like, you'd feel really embarrassed if you didn't have your mask on, or like if you got COVID and spread it to other people, you know, there's like this sense of like shame and guilt, you know? So I think that in itself is like this cultural aspect of it, like really kind of helped curb the spread.
As of now, Taiwan has only had 12 total pandemic related deaths in spite of its proximity to China. This is due to close contact tracing, strict border control, mandatory quarantine measures for visitors, and effective communication to its population on the importance of public health practices. A task force that intersected governmental, academic, and medical expertise titled the Central Epidemic Command Center also contained the virus's spread. Many point to Taiwan's previous experience with the SARS outbreak in 2003, when the country suffered the third highest mortality rate in the world, and the H1N1 virus in 2009, as almost a test model for its current COVID-19 prevention plan.
Were you able to play when you were in Taiwan?
So at the end of March, I think all the clubs, because of this sense of like, okay, we don't want to have COVID spread in our clubs or anything like that, like a lot of clubs started closing before the government actually required, you know? So clubs took like pretty much a month off when only really like 2 weeks was required. And so it was just like 1 month of not going to clubs. The people were still kind of going to bars, social distancing. Yeah, nothing like a total lockdown. And I was able to like start DJing like after a month, basically.
Mm-hmm. At which places were you DJing? Were you traveling within the country at all? Or was there certain locations that come to mind?
I played at Final in Taipei, and then there's a venue in Taizong called The Cave.
What's the last clubbing event that you went to? And could you describe the atmosphere in general?
Well, in Taiwan, before I came back to China, the last clubbing event I went to was we booked DJ Jerry. Have you heard of him? Luo Baiji, this Taiwanese early, like pretty much the first guy to bring like hip hop into like Taiwanese mainstream like music. Mm-hmm. We had him come play at this club called Final, and it was pretty insane. It was pretty rammed. It was pretty awesome. He's older now, you know, mm-hmm. but like this, it's kind of like 20 years later, like the young kids think he's cool again, you know? Right. So it was awesome.
Has it been difficult for you to see on social media the struggles that a lot of DJs in Germany and in America have been undergoing? The industry has been so hard hit in comparison to what's going on in your situation.
Yeah, I think about this a lot because I play a lot of online games with my American friends. And so we're always like chatting, you know, while you're gaming. And he's, you know, my friends are always updating me on the situation. And it's, I feel really bad. Like, I would go bonkers, especially like just people that are trying to obey the law, you know, and like trying to like get over this thing by like not going out and not, you know, like I feel so frustrated if I was them.
At what point did you decide to move back to Shanghai?
Well, I've been meaning to get back to Shanghai, but there was no way to get back because China had locked their borders, and even people with like working visas, like they can't get back in, you know. So I had to go reapply. You have to get a special type of letter that would enable you to then apply for a visa again. But then I'm Malaysian, and there is no Chinese embassy in Taiwan, so I have to go to Hong Kong, which then require another quarantining. So it was like this really, really long process. So basically, I have to like quarantine for a month and a half to get back into China.
Wow. And what was the first clubbing event that you went to in China? And what was that like?
After getting back to China, I mean, it was just great to like get out of quarantine for a month and a half. I think that itself was like, that's like, it's like better than any clubbing event. But, yeah, the first clubbing event was I played a gig in Shenzhen end of December. Mm-hmm. So that was my first clubbing experience, actually.
What was the energy like? What was the vibe like?
It was a really good gig, I guess, because there hadn't been any kind of like international DJs in China for a long time. You know, the borders being, you know, so strict now. Things are really, really kind of popping off in Shenzhen, you know. But it's been open for a while, you know. Mm-hmm. At that point, in November, you know, it's been already back to normal for like 5 months. Mm-hmm.
And now that you've been in China for, I guess, a couple months now, is there really any difference? I think a lot of people believe, especially because we're still in lockdown in Germany and yeah. Berlin, that there's going to be this kind of roaring 20s when people are just so happy. It's going to be a massive like bacchanalia. Did you feel that way? Do you feel like people are appreciating the ability to go clubbing and being free like that?
To be honest, it's like, it almost feels like, I know it's so weird saying this to like Europeans and like Americans, but it almost feels like it was really just a month or two that we couldn't go out, you know, and that was it, you know? So maybe like for the first month, it felt like, whoa, cool. But then, you know, it's been normal for like almost a year now.
That's just crazy.
Do you know what I mean? It almost feels like we don't really remember that anymore. Kind of. I mean, I do because I spent like a lot of time in quarantine because of trying to get around places. But like for other people, it's just like, yeah, like it's just something you read on the news about that's happening to other countries and like vaccines and all this stuff. But like China itself is like, you know, you kind of have to wear a mask when you're in a taxi, but that's almost like not necessary really, because there's just, it's not around, you know, the virus is not here.
Yeah, I guess it's funny talking to you about this because at this point we've been, it seems like a distant memory, whereas maybe like the timeline in the two countries that you were in, it was the pandemic, any kind of lockdown, any kind of really serious measures, club shutting.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a blip.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, also you were in quarantine, so it's a little bit different, but in terms of like daily life, it's still ensuing. People are still going about what they want to do and cultural events. But because our timeline, it's just been so like the lockdown has been so elongated.
Yeah.
There's definitely going to be a different response. Like it's not a distant memory. It's still a very much.
It's every day.
It's really every day. And it gets more severe. And there's like all these different levels. So it's really interesting talking to you about it. Is there any kind of optimism that you can impart to your European and because you say that you were talking to a lot of your friends?
I do.
Because a lot of people want to give up music. A lot of people are really rethinking their career choices, and you obviously do music.
Yeah.
So is there anything any kind of words of hope or optimism that you could give, that you could offer people?
To close out the episode, I asked each guest to relay a message to listeners around the world, especially those based in Europe who are still struggling with the social restrictions of their respective lockdowns. Susing hopes the struggle will sublimate into a form of creative persistence.
I feel that whoever is going to be writing music after that will have like this urgency, you know, that it's not just some like hobby or whatever. It's like it's something real, you know, and there's like a lot of emotions people want to express now, you know, more than before, I think. It's good. That's good fodder for music.
Ray Ho looks forward to finally reuniting with friends and playing out in her former home of Berlin.
In May, it's going to have like mutual recognition with the vaccine in Europe and also in the States as well. So it will be a lot easier for the foreigners to come to China. And then, I don't know, like right at this moment, I just think like if the vaccines get everything under control or like the virus kind of like became like less aggressive situation, that it will have like less impact on people's life, then everything's probably gonna start going back to normal. And then Berlin people probably will still know how to party.
Yeah, they'll still know how to, don't worry Berliners, you'll still know how to party.
I know, yeah, they still know how to party. Like, I mean, I'm looking forward to go back and play there.
For Gafachi, personal responsibility remains the most important thing.
All I would say is if you are in a restricted environment, just observe the rules. You know, just observe the rules, because it goes a long way to help everyone that's around you, everyone that's even away from you. Because, yeah, we want things to come back to normal. We want to be able to meet people whenever we want and whenever we decide we want to meet them.
Intimately aware of the pandemic's toll on music lovers everywhere, Amichai goes for the route of encouragement.
Do not let this put you down. Like never give up on what you do. Never give up on music. There's a certain reason why we chose to do what we do. And giving that up will probably make us very unhappy. So be patient, you know, engage when you're being called to get vaccinated, and we'll get back to it. Don't lose your hope.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Electronic Beats podcast. We all need a perspective change sometimes, so we hope you enjoyed today's episode on the status of post-COVID clubbing around the world. If you like this podcast, we would love for you to rate us on Apple Music, follow us on Spotify, or tag us on Instagram @electronicbeats. Catch you next time.